Howdy, and welcome to The Stoop. I'm Cutter Gonzalez, your host. We have two very special guests on the show today. We have Burhan Azim and Jesse Kansen-Beninoff. They both have been a huge part of making change happen in Cambridge and in Massachusetts at large. Burhan is serving his second term on the Cambridge City Council as the youngest councillor in the city's history. He's a graduate of MIT, and his primary focuses are on housing affordability, street safety, and universal pre-K. Most recently, Burhan helped pass multifamily housing up to six stories throughout Cambridge, one of the largest and most comprehensive upzonings in the country. In his previous term, Burhan wrote the amendments to remove parking mandates in the city and expanded the 100% affordable housing overlay. Jesse is a leading figure in the Massachusetts and national pro-housing movements. He currently serves as executive director of Abundant Housing MA, also known as AMA, an organization he co-founded in 2020. At AMA, Jesse leads the organization's efforts to promote local and statewide policies that will ensure housing abundance and affordability in communities across Massachusetts. Prior to founding AMA, Jesse helped establish the pro-housing movement in Massachusetts as a co-founder in 2012 and a longtime leader of A Better Cambridge, or ABC, a group dedicated to fostering sustainable growth and building a more diverse community. Jesse has over 20 years of experience working in housing in Massachusetts as a community organizer, policy consultant to public housing authorities, and affordable housing developer at local community development corporations and other nonprofits. Unlike with some of our guests, I actually had very little direct exposure to Burhan and Jesse's work before this episode. So this one was especially full of big learnings for me, and I hope it will be equally rewarding for you. Let's get to it. Hey, Jesse. Hey, Burhan. Welcome to The Stoop.
Great to be here.
Yeah, it's a pleasure.
Yeah, so glad to have y'all on. We got lots to talk about here. So why don't we just jump right in to getting to know y'all before we get to the stuff in Cambridge. I always like to ask this question because I think it gets to what motivates our work and is always so unique to each person, even when they're working in the same place. So I would love if you could share kind of your why or your purpose for why you got into the housing stuff. What motivated you to do that? Because it varies so much. And I'll leave it to whichever one of you wants to jump in first.
I guess I'll go first. You know, I've actually been in the housing space now for over 20 years. I actually moved to Massachusetts back in 2003 after I graduated college, started working as a community organizer in Somerville, right next to Cambridge, on affordable housing issues for a community development corporation there. At that time of my life, I had wanted to be an organizer. I was sort of agnostic on the issues that I started on. But it ended up being that I was working in housing. I was doing some organizing around local housing policy, doing a little bit of tenant organizing. And that got me on this path that was ultimately brought me to this point where I'm running this statewide pro housing organization. But, you know, again, I was sort of agnostic on the issue at the time, but, you know, I definitely entered the Boston policy sort of housing space at a time when there was, you know, a growing recognition that we had a crisis that was coming, and you know, housing at that point was pretty expensive in, you know, in Cambridge relative to the rest of the state. But I don't think we quite even knew the extent of our housing shortage and where that would put our entire region and state in terms of housing prices now 23 or so years later. You know, for me in particular, you know, I was working on these housing issues as affordable housing organizer at a time when the city of Somerville was starting to talk about some broad rezonings across the city and in the Union Square neighborhood in anticipation of the MBTA Green Line, that's our trolley line here in Boston, being extended into Somerville. And I found a lot of folks were coming to me asking for advice or support in just sort of understanding what like redevelopment meant, what zoning meant, what is floor area ratio, things like that. And I didn't really know that stuff. And so it ultimately got me on a path where after a few years in that role, I went back to graduate school, got a master's of city planning, continued working in the affordable housing space, and ultimately starting the group A Better Cambridge, which, over the years eventually led to the great victory that we'll be talking about today, in Cambridge, and ultimately got me to this point, where I'm running this organization. There's a lot more in those 23 years that maybe we can address in a bit. But yeah, that's sort of where I, in the long sort of short version, how I got to this point today.
For me, it was that I was actually came to the US at 4 or 5 years old, moved around a lot, as like many immigrant families do. And it was intense, like moving around every year. But I feel like I got really lucky in both like getting the visa lottery to the US and then getting into MIT later. And so I was always very involved in thinking about like how can I help and contribute in the community because I've been very blessed and lucky. I worked as an EMT for a while. And then actually because of what the work Jesse was doing, I kept on hearing about this affordable housing overlay fight that was going on in the city. And so my junior and senior year of college, I got involved in that and tried to organize and get more people to be supportive. And that's really how I first got into it. And I think that there's like this quote in politics about how like every generation gets invaded by aliens. We call them children. And it just made no sense to me that like, as a kid who grew up in Staten Island, we were always like very envious of Manhattan and Brooklyn. Like that's where all the cool, fun things were happening. And so to come here and to get involved in politics and to be like, wait, like actually people think that a four-story building is really bad and really terrifying was just new and novel. And I still don't fully understand it even after all my time in politics. But between the not just fully getting it and of course seeing the dire need for housing, that's how I got very involved and eventually ended up running for city council.
I think that is so interesting too, the like being scared of a building that's four stories or more. I grew up, when I was in when I was little, I was in Houston, and I just remember like a very Houston thing, like cruising toward downtown on a freeway, as you do in Houston, and seeing like the skyline emerge and being like, that's the coolest shit I've ever seen in my life. And I think that's where my like urbanist self got started, is I was like, that's amazing. How do I get there? And that's real. It felt like over there they were doing the cool stuff. I think both of you bring just very kind of different paths into this work, which inform your work probably in really unique ways. And I want to get to how you got there, of course, because Jesse, you're at Abundant Housing Massachusetts. Burhan, you're on City Council in Cambridge, and the paths there intersect and diverge, of course. But before we do that, let's talk about what you got done in Cambridge, because I feel like that does good context setting for like then how we got there. That like, because you did something kind of phenomenal. So maybe whichever one of you wants to hop on first about what we got done, I would love for you to just lay the ground for us.
Happy to. I think that this Study Journal article is like my favorite example of what we've done here. So it said, now the city's 2025 zoning reform sweeps away this legacy of bad planning ideas. Gone for all residential zones are the minimum parking requirements and floor area ratios from the 1962 code, the minimum lot size requirements, and even single family zoning from the 1943 code, and even the concept of severely limiting the number of units per building fundamental to the 1924 code and to American zoning practice in general. Some cities have claimed to abolish single-family zoning, but if that change merely shifts to duplex zoning, it is a difference of degree, not of kind. Other cities have a lot greater density, but confine those reforms to corridors or select areas, leaving most single-family zones untouched. Cambridge's reforms, by contrast, represent a wholesale rejection not only of the principles behind its own first zoning code, but also of American residential zoning practices dating back to the 1910s and 1920s. In their citywide application, acceptance of densal development and rejection of zoning as a stand-in for private governance, Cambridge's reforms represent a fundamentally new approach to residential land use. I'd say like the simpler way to do it is like we really did like legalize six-story buildings throughout the city. You can build them anywhere in the city now, and it's had huge impact. We're very early on, so nothing has been fully built yet, but we're seeing a building being proposed in our Riverside neighborhood that's 60 units. with 0 units of parking that was previously in that neighborhood. In the last 15 years, you'd only seen 4 units built. So that's like 200 units of 200 years of housing just in that one building. And it's going to lead to hopefully, a lot of big transformations in the city.
Yeah, that is quite a massive change. And I think like the 6 stories citywide is just has me like drooling. That is so good. Because that evokes images of like what people go on vacation to see in Europe and other places for like, oh, why are these streets so vibrant? And why do I want to just sit here outside with my tea and be on the street? Like that's the image, right? And did y'all convey like in the kind of convincing the public that this was the right thing to do, because that can be scary, as we mentioned a minute ago. Did you convey a different kind of like urban imagery or lifestyle? Like, how did you get people on board with this?
The way that I I think that it's really like in housing circles, we often talk about, supply versus demand. And like that's how we convince the public because more housing will bring down prices. And I think that's true to some extent, right? Like prices matter a lot. The biggest budget line on everyone's budget is housing. And you also have to get people to like the end product. And we were trying to be very intentional. Both 6 stories worked because it's a lot of housing and it's the place where the building code changes, but it's also, the way that we opened it up. The first headline of the first time we ever even talked about this bill was like Cambridge wants to allow Paris-style development, and that 6 stories, that beautiful images of Paris, it made like real for people this beautiful city that we could live in a way that was not scary. That didn't convince all the skeptics, of course, but to a lot of people, like it gave like a hope that this, even though it was so radical and so dramatic, would not lead to something terrible, but could lead to something really positive and beautiful.
Yeah, that seems like that alternate kind of world, almost world building opens up a kind of conceptual space that seems really powerful. There's a lot of data on how to walk people to the water on supply and obviously indicating that prices drop, and that's felt in a very real way, but this seems like an additional really substantial layer on top of that, which is really, really interesting. And I would be remiss too if we didn't mention, I think I heard some mention of Cambridge being like the origin point of kind of the YIMBY movement, if I remember correctly, and some controversy because the East or the West Coast friends would probably want to claim that title, but y'all aren't letting them have it. what's that about?
Well, I mean, I think for all the success that Burhan has led on the council in recent years, not only the citywide rezoning, but previously really strengthening the citywide affordable housing zoning overlay, eliminating all costly parking mandates in the city. I think it didn't happen in the vacuum, and I think it came out of work that a number of us did for many years leading up to this new era in Cambridge, and in particular, not that it necessarily started with, but really accelerated with the founding of a Better Cambridge back in 2012. A Better Cambridge being one of the proto YIMBY or pro housing groups, that we really did sprout up, facing some of the same challenges that folks out on the West Coast, that got more of maybe the national media attention around 2016 or so, and led to this sort of explosion in the YIMBY space. Same type of work, same issues, but we started back in 2012. That the founding of a Better Cambridge was during a really a different era in Cambridge, right? This was after generations of downzoning, and politics in the city really being dominated by anti-housing homeowners, who really like filled the vacuum in public comment and in community meetings. Public comment at city council and other community meetings. I had lived in Cambridge at that point for about 9 years. Like I said in the intro, I've been in the housing and development space in a variety of capacities, during that time. And I wasn't necessarily deeply involved in the conversations around development and growth in Cambridge, but I paid attention. I read the local paper back then, and was civically involved in other ways, so I saw what was going on, and definitely always struck me that Cambridge has this reputation, certainly in Massachusetts, and also I think around the country and around the world as this progressive sort of welcoming community. But what really struck me in my first nine or 10 years in Cambridge was that whenever there was a new housing development proposed, whether it was more affordable homes or a mixed income development, maybe sort of a broader scale master plan, there was always strong backlash against new homes in Cambridge. And it just didn't, it struck me, like, how can you, Cambridge, purport this reputation internationally as this open and welcoming place, but every time more homes are proposed in your border, you're raising the same concerns that anti-housing people in much less urban dense communities, around the country, bring up. And it struck me as just out of sync with this reputation. Like I said, I didn't get deeply involved in those issues, despite recognizing this happened, until 2012. In the summer of 2012, a group of homeowners, mostly in the Central Square neighborhood of Cambridge, which is the neighborhood that's between Harvard Square and Kendall Square, where MIT is, so between the two major universities, the major transit center, or Red Line access, great urban neighborhood, one of the more urban neighborhoods in all of Greater Boston, with closer access to job centers in like Kendall Square, downtown Boston, than even many neighborhoods of Boston proper. A group of homeowners proposed a downzoning in Central Square to reduce the heights and densities that would be allowed for new housing, limit commercial growth as well. And that really struck me, given the characteristics of Central Square, also a great neighborhood in terms of like social services that it provide and access to services. Just like, if anywhere we should make it easier to build more homes instead of harder, it should be Central Square. So that was really the straw that broke the camel's back for me and ultimately forced me to get involved in some of these conversations around growth and development in Cambridge. Initially, I was showing up at community meetings. There were some parallel neighborhood planning processes going on alongside the city council considering this downzoning petition. And just as an individual, I would stand up and say why I thought this was the wrong approach for Cambridge. And people would come up to me afterwards and say, "Oh, Jesse, I really appreciated what you said. I agree with you. I didn't know how to say it," or sometimes even worse, "I didn't feel comfortable saying it," because there was a lot of vitriol. And in particular, as more people came out of the woodwork and we started organizing, and ultimately we created this organization, A Better Cambridge. There was a lot of vitriol thrown towards us, and that continues to this day, by some of the folks in Cambridge who were more opposed to housing that up until that point had really, again, existed in a vacuum, right? There was not a lot of pushback against them at the time. So all of this is to say, like, that was the starting point for sort of the pro-housing movement in Cambridge, certainly really all of Massachusetts. And that was at a point where, ultimately we got the city council at that point to table the downzoning petition. They didn't even vote it down. That would have given it the right to come back. Fortunately, it never did come back. But Cambridge was in a very, very different place when A Better Cambridge emerged on the scene back in 2012. I continued to run the organization for maybe about 8 years after that. With this my co-founders and steering committee. But even since I left the organization 2018, 2019, I moved to Boston. I would say their impact has grown, and it has grown in terms of electing Burhan and other pro housing councillors as a majority on the city council, which it wasn't back in 2012. And certainly these policy wins are because of the work that the pro housing movement was able to do, and the growth we had since 2012, when the notion of legalizing six stories across the city of Cambridge in 2012, if someone had said that was going to happen, I would have laughed at them.
That's real. It's similarly here in Austin. I'm in Austin now, Houston when I was little, if that wasn't clear from what I said earlier. But in Austin, I think I first lived here in 2018 and then got priced out. And even as recently as that, the council was kind of NIMBY. It was like there was building going on, but it was largely like suburban sprawly kind of stuff because that's what Texas allows, but by right basically everywhere. Certainly not like the kind of energy we have now where we got good people elected to council and they kind of just ran. And they were like, we're not just trying to make Austin like marginally more affordable or build a small number of units. We have to make it deeply affordable and like transform this into an actual place where people can live and have vibrant, connected lives. And that is a paradigm shift. And it was enabled, I think, likewise by that on the ground organizing that I think, like you were doing, Jesse, is sometimes decade timescales ahead of when you actually start to see the big splashy headline wins, but that's the like requisite foundation laying that empowers people like Burhan then to come in and do these exciting things. And Burhan, remind me, you were involved in some of the advocacy and organizing work and organizations as well before running for council, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I was a part of the board of A Better Cambridge, which Jesse started, trying to get this affordable housing overlay passed. And that's during that process is when I met the mayor, and he encouraged me to run, and I ended up running for the first time. But also before running for city council, I also with Jesse founded Abundant Housing Massachusetts, and I think technically Jesse and the others had a little bit of a head start because they had organized one of the first YIMBY towns, and then they had money left over from that and had a core group of people. But I got to help out a little bit in the beginning and then be incorporated. And here we are, I think 5, 6 years later since our first incorporation. So that's been pretty exciting.
And, I will say one thing about Burhan is that, right, he was a, what were you, a junior or senior at the time. He showed up on the scene when we at Better Cambridge were organizing for the first initial passage of this citywide affordable housing overlay that basically says, 100% affordable housing can be built by right anywhere, anywhere in the in Cambridge. He showed up as an undergrad, an MIT undergrad at the time, who, was concerned about this issue and organized other undergrads at MIT to show up and, speak to the council. I think connected with some folks at Harvard down the street as well, and really brought students into this process, which, a lot of times you don't see undergrad. We have a lot of students in Cambridge and the Boston area, and you don't see undergrads in particular. Right, because undergrads generally feel more connected to their hometowns rather than where they're spending 4 years in college. You don't see them getting deeply involved in local politics and policy organizing in particular. And not only, of course, did Burhan do that, but it sort of grounded him in Cambridge. And he ran for council the first time, I think, in 2019 and lost that time. It's not totally, there's not. There is some history of Harvard or MIT graduates who stay in Cambridge for a while running for council as like an experiment. And then they lose and then they leave and you never really hear from them again in local politics. But Burhan stuck around and ended up winning 2 years later and then winning re-election after that and ultimately having major impact on the council. So just want to give, that recognition, like so really unique commitment to his sort of adopted hometown, even as an undergrad.
Burhan, I mean, aside from maybe just like personality wanting to be involved in this kind of work, like what made you do it as an undergrad? That seems like I mean, similarly, like my college town was not terribly far from my where I kind of grew up. And I got involved there too, but not to the same depth, obviously. I'm not on city council anywhere, thank God. Not my ministry. But what made you decide, like, I'm gonna dig in here I see this problem and I'm determined to fix it in this way. That seems really unique.
Yeah, I mean, that's a good question. I think part of it is that, did a degree in material science, and that was because, going into college, I was like, pollution is a plastics problem, right? Like, you see the ocean full of plastics and all that sort of stuff. Climate change is like a solar cell problem, all these sorts of stuff, like these big challenges were materials problems. And then you get longer and longer into it, and you're like, well, actually, like, solar is actually cheaper than other forms of electricity already. And today, a lot of it is political problems. And so I think I had that revelation as I was going through college. And also, I think there's like a desire to get your hands on the machine and try to like fix it. Like, we were in such a bad place, right? Like, up until we passed this regional zoning, 85% of residential properties were non-conforming, right? I think in Boston, in residential neighborhoods, it's like 99%. And so it just creates this place where, you need to have a really, really big change. Just to get to even, right? Like, you have to first get everything to be conforming, and then you want even extra capacity on top of that so you can add housing. And I think that unless you're deep in the space, you just don't understand how bad the situation is. And so through city council, through city hall, you could advocate, and being an advocate is hard, but even then you can get like half a loaf, and it's like really hard to move the needle, and it takes like, this all work took a decade, but even a decade is pretty quick turnaround in some policy spaces. And so there was like a desire of like, hey, like, I just want to get elected so that like I can write this big reform, because I don't think anyone else in city council understands like how big a problem it is. They might be directionally aligned, and I've been very blessed to have a city council who's been very like gets it on housing, gets it on development. But like the idea of like, a lot of this reform that we did in Cambridge, like I wrote it all, and then I had to like have those really hard fights with staff, with like nonprofits, with other developers of like, why it can't just be like half a loaf. Like, we can't just have like, yeah, just have a little bit bigger setback, just have a little bit lower height, like it'll be all fine. But like, no, actually, if we were literal and serious about meeting our goals, it really does have to be this big. And I think that's just harder to do from the outside, or at least from the outside alone. You need to have both the outside and the inside game going on.
Yeah, I was going to ask about that next. I'm curious about kind of two big things about how we got across the finish line here. One, of course, Burhan, you're like inside talking to your colleagues on city council and staff as a council person and how that works. Because we hear a lot about the campaign side and less about that. But I'm also curious about the campaign side. And so maybe we can work backwards from there. Talk about like what the organizing effort looked like to get this across the finish line. Besides just the infrastructure and like having the orgs in place, like how did you initiate these conversations? How did you show enough support to where council members felt like they had the public behind them and go from there? And then we can talk on the council side.
Yeah. So I think that it was, like the first and most important piece is that like elections matter, right? And I think we want to underplay how much elections matter. I think that, I'll be a little bit more critical in this way, in that we think that like, oh, like, Boston and Somerville have not done as ambitious things, especially Boston. And so perhaps that's just like the electorate is different and all those sorts of things. And I'm like, well, actually, the individual people you elect really, really have a big impact. And so we were really lucky that, a Better Cambridge helped and worked, and we've had a housing supermajority on the city council for a little while now. And so that happened. And then, my city councilors were like very much like, we should do something on this housing thing. We don't know what it is, but we would really want to do something big, and we're willing to take a tough vote, but just one. And so like, Burhan, you really seem to care about this, go and do something. And on top of that, it was informed by past experiences, right? You think like, oh, going smaller is always more popular, and so you're just trying to fight, to compromise. But we tried legalizing triple deckers before, and that was incredibly unpopular, because what happened was that all the people who wanted housing were like, yeah, sure, whatever, but like, most of Cambridge is already triple deckers. What does this really do? All the people who were upset about development in general were still very upset. And then there's, a third constituency of people who are on the left in Cambridge, and they were like, yeah, well, three market rate units, probably going to be pretty expensive. What does that do for me? And so actually, by going bigger, we were able to say like, hey, like, if you go to six stories, you trigger our inclusionary ordinance, you'll get affordable units, and you'll get a lot more housing. And that made those two constituencies really happy. And Like that was what allowed us to have that winning formula, was trying to do all those conversations and bringing people along. And we tried very hard to be very intentional about that at every stage. Like the first meeting that we had in the public was like, hey, we brought, Jason Furman, Obama's like head of Council of Economic Advisors, very like moderate coded in that way. And we had Paul Williams, Center for Public Enterprise, big guy in social housing, very left coded in that way. And we had them both sit down and say, like whichever direction you head in, market rate or social housing or government build, deed restricted, low income housing, you need to do zoning reform. And this is a great proposal. And so from there, like everything was intentionally built up to be, a drama about like, it doesn't matter if you're more moderate or more left wing, you have to support this. And then, my colleagues were consistently with me. Like, I have to give them a lot of credit. Like, there was a lot of times where it was a 5-4 narrow vote. Like, it could have really gone the other way. But at every difficult moment, not always from the onset, but by the end, they always did the right thing and they always kind of supported it. And so that was really wonderful. And then I think that it also goes to show you how some things, like, we overestimate what we can do in a year, but underestimate a decade. Lots of people came out in support. We won public comment more often than we didn't. And that was both because we brought a lot of new people. We, energized people. But it's also like people who are very, very skeptical beforehand were just won over by the argument. And persuasion does work, right? Like, there was a friend of mine, Charles Franklin, who was once like really deep in the leadership of the Cambridge Residents Alliance, which was very deeply opposed to the any zoning change in Central Square, which Jesse talked about. And by the end, he was like our strongest warrior about not only going for the zoning, but not watering down at all. And so, I think that it was really beautiful to see all these people who we'd been working on for years and years, and this was like the time to show all that proof and all that power we'd built.
And Jesse, you had, I know you had some experience we've talked about before a little bit about like the way that work has transformed, not just in like broad strokes, but like a lot of the work seemed to be before about like defending against downzoning and supporting like good incidental projects. I would love if you could help draw out some of that, like how that transformation happened and then what you think is possible coming out of this kind of new paradigm that's happening in Cambridge.
I mean, I, 2012, when we started ABC, A Better Cambridge, we were focused initially on that downzoning, which was we have the citizen petition process where any voters can propose a zoning change in the city. So that was our first effort, but that was really, I would say, whatever their intention or goals were, the folks that supported that, they were responding to what they perceived to be a development boom that was happening in Cambridge. Not all of it really even residential development, but we have this major life sciences hub in Kendall Square, really the capital of like the life sciences industry in the United States is in Cambridge. And there was this sense of big lab buildings encroaching on Central Square and other neighborhoods, and then the housing built to serve the workers in those places maybe not being affordable to other folks. And so that was where that all came from. I think what I'm getting at though is that like there was, relative to other parts of the Boston region at least, more development from like 2012 through maybe 16 or so happening in Cambridge than certainly there is today. And we found ourselves at ABC after we sort of put a pause and ultimately a stop on that downzoning of Central Square, that our role ended up being to sort of fill the voice of the pro side of any single project that was proposed before the city council or the planning board. A lot of the development at that time in Cambridge required some specialized rezonings because of all, in that quote from CityLab that Burhan read at the opening, because of all the downzonings over, many decades in Cambridge, you couldn't build much of anything. So, in order to build some of these big projects in Cambridge, developers needed to get a rezoning. So that forced every development wasn't just like you needed a zoning variance or anything. You like literally had to get zoning changes before the city council, and those were fights. And so we found ourselves at ABC at that time, really just playing that role of showing up to city council and planning board, occasionally a ZBA meeting, just like supporting individual projects. We were ABC still is all volunteer run, grassroots organization. Everyone was working full-time jobs or had families. And so, we didn't have the capacity to expand our scope and really focus on being much more proactive about trying to create the regulations, the zoning, the system in Cambridge that would help achieve the vision that we were fighting for as a more sort of open, inclusive, and affordable Cambridge. And so, there was a shift that happened really around the time that sort of I had to sort of end my deep involvement with ABC as I moved to Boston and was starting, abundant housing, where somewhat because of the softening of the development landscape at that time, there was less of these major projects that required extensive rezonings in order to get them approved. But ABC leadership was able to sort of shift focus on policy, right? So we had started that a little bit with the first citywide affordable housing zoning overlay, which did start when I was at ABC. But after that, there was an attempt to do this missing middle housing petition, essentially legalize, re-legalize the triple decker in Cambridge that Burhan mentioned. There was, and then, parallel to that time, ABC got more deeply involved in politics, recognizing that, we won't be able to achieve these policy wins unless we have people on the council who agree with us. And so ABC actually, it's, a bit of a roller coaster, but ultimately created an independent expenditure political action committee that, does some spending in support of pro-housing candidates for city council, not in coordination with them, of course, but Burhan, Mark McGovern, some others being beneficiaries of that. So yeah, I mean, I do think a lot of the recent success is sort of twofold. ABC was able to move away from focusing on like project by project advocacy, more of a focus on policy and specific zoning changes that they would like to see, and then creating the infrastructure to get, friendly councilors into office. Some of it is that Cambridge has a unique electoral system. There are nine city councilors who are elected citywide through a ranked choice voting system. And so that means you don't have to run like district by district races. ABC can endorse nine candidates, and the structure of ranked choice voting means that, even if a candidate that they endorse loses, the cross endorsement by ABC means that their votes will then transfer to someone like Burhan to ultimately help him get elected. And so there's definitely a benefit from the system and the way it's structured in Cambridge as well that gave ABC some of that electoral success, but they were really able to take advantage of that for sure. So I think that's sort of the shift that's happened over the last, 10 or 12 years with ABC's advocacy. And I think it's, I think the it's showing dividends, both in terms of getting, Burhan and others elected and the policies that they've passed.
I agree, and I think Austin is a kind of similar thing where it was like get good people elected and let them run, you know? And I mean, Burhan, to your point, like you had to write all these things. You had a whole internal advocacy effort with your colleagues on council. And from what I know of what's happened here in Austin, a similar thing, people who are on the AURA board here, which is like our urbanist kind of advocacy group, then popped on to city council, and then they were like, okay, you didn't have to do a bunch of lobbying for them to be interested in the issue. They self-identified as that person on council. So my councilman, council member Kadri, who I actually know from years ago back in college, when he got elected, and since, like, they've done a ton of housing stuff, and he's really interested in parking and what we can do, not because we got rid of citywide parking minimums, I think last year, like in the whole city. I think we're still the biggest city to have done so. But now it's a question of like, okay, how do we change the incentive structure to not just say you can build however much parking you want, but like to say build less parking, right? Like it's bad for our city to have these kind of things. And the cool thing is like Aura is not having to then think up a policy package from scratch and go and lobby someone to be interested in it, convince them to carry it, convince them the public cares enough to where they have enough cover to do it. They just want to do it. And that seems like a really different thing to work in and a different like advocacy setting than, if we were trying to do this 10 years ago, we'd have to start from scratch with the city council member and say like, hey, your district is really suffering with XYZ. Maybe we should consider this thing and convince them to care about it. You don't have to do that with someone like Burhan, right? Like Burhan, you care. You already want to do the work.
One thing I'll say is like I generally agree. Like I think that what Cambridge's unique electoral system does is that it allows for kind of like pseudo political parties to form, right? Rather because everyone's going to vote for a Democrat anyways, you kind of have a Better Cambridge and its counterpart is like a more NIMBY organization kind of take place and be like the kind of fault lines of local politics. I think that outside of this specific unique system and cities where you can kind of do that. Like endorsements definitely matter, but I think that just in our political moment, like there's this great like thing that Ezra Klein talks about all the time about like we're in time of weak political parties with strong partisanship, and I think that that just means that organizations can be really effective at advocacy and convincing people, but people really care about their elected officials at that moment. And the ability of elected officials to move the conversation really, really does matter and can be really impactful in that, in the social media movement, like an elected official can go up and make a point and like, also gets paid to do the job versus a lot of advocates being volunteer and all that sorts of stuff. And so you get a lot of resource and a platform to kind of really strongly advocate for a point, which can help turbocharge a movement. And I think that you see that, all around the country. I mean, in this specific moment, like I think that, not my particular politics, but like Zoran's election in New York is really turbocharging DSA there, right? And so you kind of see this feedback loop between running candidates and having a political movement that can really feed off of each other in a very interesting way. And I think that's like something that I'm learning. I was before very much a movement person. You convince the public, you do the advocacy work, and elected officials will kind of come along to get along eventually once they see that an issue is popular, and more realizing the agency that some elected officials can play.
Yeah, this is getting at something we should probably pick at together here, because I think and I think biographically, Jesse, you have a good entree into this where you've done some of the obviously a lot of the local work, and now you're at Abundant Housing Massachusetts, which has a more statewide focus. Burhan, I'm sure as a city council member, you're feeling that there's like an interesting relationship between state advocacy or state action and local leadership. And I'm wondering if y'all could explore some of that a little bit. Like, what is the right mix of state action on housing to local leadership? Like, because we hear a lot about the local control stuff, but then also like it's more than a local market, right? So I'm wondering about that. Jesse, you probably have thoughts.
Yeah, I mean, I think that this is a huge conversation that we have in Massachusetts, that we have been having in particular lately around housing and zoning reform in Massachusetts. Local control is certainly a conversation in every state and every region of the country. We have this really unique system of government, local government in Massachusetts, though, where Cambridge is a city and there's about 50 cities in the state. There's 351 municipalities, so the balance, about 300 of the other municipalities, are towns. And the town form of government in Massachusetts is town meeting, right? And this has its roots both in sort of like early, colonial systems where all the residents of the town of Boston got together to make some local decisions that at least they were allowed to make by the king. But that it still exists to this day, where again in the towns, the legislative body of government is either representative town meeting, which was only started in the 1920s, which allows you to elect a few of your neighbors from your precinct to the town meeting So you have a legislative body in a town of 10 or 15,000 people that might be 250 or 300 of your fellow neighbors. That's representative town meeting. We also have full town meeting or open town meeting, which is every registered voter in town can show up at probably like the high school gym or community center for a few days a year and vote on every ordinance and bylaw for the town that year. So there's this really deeply entrenched, not just history, but like structure of local control over a variety of issues. And, because of that, even though under Massachusetts Constitution, land use regulation does live with the legislature and the state, legislative decisions over generations have given more and more control of that to municipalities. Particularly over zoning and their ability to ultimately like have unfettered control over zoning in a vacuum. To make matters worse, we have virtually no county or regional government, certainly none that has any authority over land use. So you have 351 cities and towns, including the 300 towns utilizing town meeting, that are making these decisions in a vacuum. Without any concern for how the choices they make or don't make may impact their neighbors directly next door, let alone the entire region or the state. And that's on the housing front, what's gotten us to the point we're in Massachusetts, where we have one of the most extreme housing shortages in the nation relative to our size, the greater Boston, Boston, Cambridge, surrounding area housing market, like rental prices are on par with Manhattan and San Francisco and Honolulu, and the median price for home ownership in Greater Boston is $1 million, right? So all of that is because we have allowed municipalities to place such strict controls, unfettered controls over what can be built in their borders. If all you allow is a McMansion on a 2-acre lot, well, you're only going to allow the folks who can afford to live there to be in your community, and that, if every town does that, that exacerbates the housing shortage and drives up prices. The state of Massachusetts has tried in recent years to dial some of that back. The legislature and governor and previous governor, we have this MBTA Communities Act that says that the 177 cities and towns, including Cambridge, that have MBTA service, that's the Massachusetts Bay Transit Authority, that's our subway, our light rail, our commuter rail, bus system. All 177 towns and cities served by the MBTA or adjacent to other towns that are served by it have to adopt at least one multifamily zoning district where multifamily housing is allowed as of right. And in our infinite wisdom and our deep desire to maintain and maintain local control, we designed this pretty significant state zoning reform in a way that isn't fully preemptive of local control. In fact, it requires all 177 cities and towns to go through the affirmative a rezoning process, the same process through local city councils or worse town meetings, that any zoning change would have to go through. And while the vast majority of the 177 cities and towns are in compliance with that law, we have a good 25%, 20 maybe percent that are actively resisting it and trying to oppose it. And even in some of the cases of towns who have complied because it was sort of left to them to comply with it, they've done it in a way where on paper they're meeting the law and the state regulations that have implemented the law, but effectively they place their zoning districts, their multifamily zoning districts, over areas where development is actually unlikely to happen because of what actually already exists there, whether it's existing multifamily, Superfund sites, things like that. So that's the challenge that we're facing in Massachusetts, and a lot of towns have been really resistant, and the pushback to this MBTA communities law has exacerbated some of the resistance to other forms of state zoning reform that take even more sort of local decision making away from the cities and towns. And that's what we're confronting as we at Abundant Housing advocate for other reforms that we've seen other states around the country adopt, even in the recent months. Despite the fact that we are in one of the worst positions in the state, in the country, Massachusetts is, in terms of the supply of homes, of affordable homes that we have, and our ability to build more. And so, yeah, I mean, it's an ongoing conversation. I think the lesson that I've drawn from Cambridge was easily and early in compliance with the MBTA Communities Act. That was really a non-issue there. But the lesson from this citywide upzoning, the six stories by right, that I've tried to express to other communities, to representatives of our sort of League of Cities, and legislators, is that, you do still have, whatever town, have a lot of authority over your land use planning and zoning. And like Cambridge did, you can also make some choices independent of the state telling you that you have to, that gives you more of a role in addressing our state's, shortage of reasonably priced homes, and to do it in a way that fits your community. And maybe it's not going to be six stories citywide in some of the distant, lower density suburbs, but it, there are other things that you can do. You have the power. And what Cambridge shows us is that with the political will, you can do it. And it doesn't always require the state to say you have to do it. Now, we continue to advocate for other reforms that will have the state telling communities that they do or don't have to do certain things. But there is some power that towns have. We also at Abundant Housing recently sponsored a statewide poll on people's attitudes towards housing, and unsurprisingly found that by huge proportion, people find housing to be the number and housing affordability to be the number one issue facing the state. But we also dived into, like, do you believe that building more homes that people can afford is more important than local control? And 60% of people said yes. We believe that state action that will allow us to build more homes people can afford is more important than maintaining local control. 70%, over 70% said affordable homes is more important than our neighborhood character as well. So I think, to sort of summarize it, like, I think what we need to do is the task before us is to find the people who are sort of represented by that poll, who are the clear majority, and make sure that they are the ones that are, pulling, getting into the ear of maybe their town meeting members, their town councilors, their state legislators, and say, you will not suffer political consequences by passing pro-housing reforms, both at the local and the state level. But it's a really hard conversation in Massachusetts right now. We have our work cut out for us, and sometimes I see the success of other members of the WNN network, and I'm like, oh God, I wish we were there. How do we get some of that energy, here into Massachusetts? But we're working on it.
I mean, Burhan's success in Cambridge with this six stories kind of Parisian development pattern is probably possible in part because of that relationship, right? Like you have a strong sense of local leadership and autonomy, and so it allows someone like Burhan on Cambridge City Council to make that happen there. And then likewise, and in Texas, I don't know if we have that same kind of local engagement or local leadership. It's kind of a different model here, a lot more state legislature consuming the public consciousness. And it's taken this until this session, which we just wrapped up this month, to actually get substantial pro-housing stuff done at a scale. Austin being an outlier, but Austin kind of like Cambridge in a way with the university communities here, and then just bills itself as being progressive and othered from a lot of Texas. But it seems like there's a real balance there, and that's very, very interesting to hear. I had no idea about the town meeting structure too. That sounds wild to me, like absolutely nuts.
Oh my gosh, it's crazy. It's crazy. Yeah.
Yeah, I would never want to navigate that. Well, we have just a couple minutes left here, and I just want to open the floor, of course, if there's anything else that y'all want to share. And I appreciate so much the stories and the insights you've given so far, but if there's anything else, open space for you.
Yeah, and I think that's a wrap. I think easy peasy lemon squeezy, it'll be cool to check in on a year and see what happens. We just got the numbers today, but for the last 3 years, Cambridge had only built 23 units of housing in a city of 50,000 units. And so I'm very excited to see what the numbers look like in a few years from now.
Yeah, I think, I absolutely agree with Burhan that it'll be really interesting to see. I think, unlike, sort of the parallel of Austin, which is a major city, like it is the region, right? Cambridge is a small portion of the broader Cambridge region, right? Even just geographically, right? Seven and a half square miles of city. And, I think what we're going to have to pay attention to is folks saying, look, you did this in Cambridge, and it's not like prices are falling drastically, because it's going to take a lot of work, not just in the greater Boston region, but across the state of Massachusetts, to be building the homes that will actually, moderate and actually decrease prices, like we've seen in recent years in the case of Austin. But it's going to take Boston, it's going to take Somerville, it's going to take, hundreds and hundreds of cities and towns to actually bring that down. So, I hope that we can create the right messaging narrative to say, like, just because you're not seeing a drastic drop in prices doesn't mean it was ineffective, because we're gonna need everyone else to do more as well.
I'll also add, this is like a back of the envelope calculation, so it's not exactly perfect. But I think that there's now almost more zoned capacity in Cambridge for new housing than the rest of the state combined, at least of a little while ago. And that's like a crazy fact. It's not like perfectly equal. I think the rest of the state combined has a little bit larger. And it's always hard to measure these things, so this is back of envelope. But like, I think it's pretty exciting. The final connection I would make to Austin is the example you gave is like in 1950, Cambridge and Austin were the same exact population, I think. And so I'm not saying that this is our time to catch up, but like we'll see what happens in a couple of years.
Well, that would take Cambridge annexing, Boston and, probably 60 other cities and towns to do that, which I'm not necessarily opposed to. And Burhan's been an advocate for that in the past, sometimes cheekily, on April Fool's Day. But yeah, definitely different dynamics in our region. But yeah.
For sure. That is so funny. I had no idea about that. Austin's like growth pattern is super weird too, historically in Texas. Very strange. But hey, if y'all want to try to catch up, we'll keep running. Yeah, no, great. So good to chat with you both. And I'm just deeply grateful. Your insights are many and immense, and your time is super valuable. So I appreciate you taking the time to be here and be on the stoop.
Yeah, thanks for having us. It was great.
Yeah, wonderful. Thank you so much.
Incredible things are happening in Massachusetts and especially Cambridge, thanks to the work these two are doing. I'm more than a little envious of Burhan's Paris in the Northeast, but that's more motivation to get the work done here at home for me. But even more than envy, I'm feeling immense gratitude for Burhan and Jesse's work and their willingness to come sit on the stoop for a while and share their stories. I'm energized and carrying new ideas of what's possible after talking with them. You can find Burhan as at Real Burhan Azim. That's at RealBurhanAzeem on Twitter or X, and at burhanazim.bsky.social on Blue Sky. You can find Jesse as at JesseKB, that's at JesseKB on Twitter or X, and at jessekb.bsky.social on Blue Sky. You can also follow Abundant Housing Massachusetts as at Abundant Homes MA on Twitter or X, and at AbundantHousingMA.org on Blue Sky. They produce and share tons of incredible housing work on their socials, so I highly recommend a follow. As always, you can connect with the Welcoming Neighbors Network online at welcomingneighbors.us and on social media. We are at WNN Pro Housing on Instagram and at welcomingneighbors.us on Blue Sky. The Stoop is produced in-house at the Welcoming Neighbors Network by me, Cutter Gonzalez. The music for our show was created by my friend Nolan Hopkins. If you have ideas for our show, including special episodes, guests you'd like to hear from, or topics you'd like to cover, shoot me an email at cutter@welcomingneighbors.us or DM me on social media. My handle is at @CutterWGonzalez across all platforms. Thanks for joining us on The Stoop. Talk to y'all real soon.